Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me in studio today is Clinton Matos.
Hey, we're actually in studio this time.
And Robin Chetty.
I'm also here.
Right, let's jump straight into the news. Let's just jump right into it.
All right.
Who's up first?
I think Robin. Yeah. Tell us about Google.
Yeah, so as you probably may have known, there is a pandemic on a global scale at the moment.
Is it technically a pandemic? Is that the right classification?
I think it's epidemic is the word they're using.
I have no idea.
I wouldn't be surprised if that changes in the next couple of months, to be fair. I think people are struggling to actually identify. Oh, also, we're talking about the coronavirus, obviously.
Yeah, novel coronavirus.
Yeah, so as you may or may not know, it is originating from Wuhan in China. There's been a lot of misinformation currently around the virus itself, how it spread, how quickly it can be identified, the symptoms to look out for. And as a result of trying to, combat that misinformation, Google has partnered with the World Health Organization to actually provide alerts, tips, and helpful pieces of advice with regards to people that are searching for the coronavirus on Google. So you'll normally see a bunch of news articles, and then just a little bit below that, you'll actually see a bunch of tips that are, vetted by the World Health Organization. Yeah. So it's just an effort to kind of combat misinformation that's out there at the moment.
And I mean, the crazy thing about this virus is that it's shown us not just how quickly a disease can spread, but how quickly misinformation can be spread. And I think it's every day I'm seeing a news report about coronavirus that is, I don't know, misleading in some way.
There's a reason when something gets popular on the internet, we call it viral. I mean, we're kind of going, I'm not trying to be funny. There's a reason we use that terminology. It's because it spreads very fast.
But yeah, it is. It's nice to see that Google is cognizant of that and is countering it with actual information. So it's just something that appears on the sidebar where an ad might usually appear.
Not in place of an ad, but say for example, just below your, the latest news stories. Just below that, you'll have your.
So we're doing it live. If you search coronavirus or anything like that, right at the top, before you even see the news stories, there's an SOS alert. Mm. Then there's the news. Then there's stuff from social media. It's Twitter for me because that's what I use the most. Then there's the help and information that was mentioned, and then below that there's the safety tips, and then it's the normal Google search results. So there's three different things that you'd get to help you out or to spread proper information where there wouldn't be before.
Cool. Okay, so you just see that on Google then. It's just there if you search for the virus name. Mm-hmm. But what happens if I search for coronavirus fake news?
Well, let's do it. We'll do it live. Flip it. You just get top stories. And
okay.
Then
all right. You have to actually be looking for news on the disease.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, that's good enough, I feel. Right. Moving on to slow internet.
Yes.
I was trying to think of a cool segue, but I think it's a little bit insensitive.
When you edit it, you should just leave 60 seconds in the audio.
Let's not do that. So the West Africa cable system and the South Atlantic 3/ West Africa submarine cable.
Great name.
Or WAX or SAT-3/ WASC. My friends had a good laugh at me about that this weekend. They experienced breaks in January, if you weren't aware, leading to slow internet speeds. Initially, some services were just inaccessible altogether, but through redundancy and backup solutions, most of South Africa's internet service providers have been able to keep service running at the very least. There is a vessel called the Leon Thevenin, which was dispatched in mid-January to conduct repairs on these cables. The first repair is the West Africa cable system, which is off the coast of Congo. The good news is that cable repair will be finished by the 6th of February. And it was originally scheduled to be completed by the 8th of February, but we're now 2 days ahead of schedule, which is really good. But the bad news is that there's still another two breaks that need to be fixed on the SAT-3 cable. The first one is going to, as soon as they finished the repair on the West Africa cable system, then they'll move over to the next break, and then from there to the next break after that. So essentially, we're looking at normal internet service resuming around the 25th of February.
That's a stupid question.
Yeah.
If there are multiple breakages, can you not deploy multiple ships to do multiple repairs at once?
So as far as I understand it, is the equipment needed to conduct these repairs is incredibly specialized, and above that, the crew that needs to be conducting the repairs needs to be highly trained. Because, I mean, you're going underwater, and we're not talking about like, oh, I'm going to the deep end. We're talking about like you're going into the ocean with
not like sea of
shark things.
Isn't the usual cause for breakage sharks biting the cables?
Yes, that was one. But I don't know what caused these breakages. I think we'll know once repairs have been completed. 10 to 1. My money is on ship anchors because they are so close to the coast. All the breaks are very close to the coast and very close to where ships are. So
I put my money on the Megalodon.
Megalodon. Okay, so we've got Megalodon. We've got all of ship
this,
anchors.
All of this is just advertising for the Meg 2. It's indie marketing.
So yeah, so essentially the long and short of it is that by the 25th of February at the earliest, internet in South Africa should be running at top speed once again. There could be other delays because apparently in repairing the West Africa cable system, they ran into issues with rough seas and terrible weather. So, yeah, just to give you an update on that, we're looking at 25th of February for internet service to be resumed back to normal. Clinton.
Things are on fire, in Australia at least. So the bushfires in Australia, I don't know what the state of them are now, but they are still ongoing in some form or another. And what I want to talk about really quickly is that a lot of video game developers, publishers, and other entities are doing their part to either donate directly or they're doing some kind of drive where they take proceeds from sales and are giving it to various causes for the bushfires. The latest one to do so is Activision. So for Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the remake, they had something called the Outback Pack, which was a pack of DLC, and then they renamed it to the Outback Relief Pack. They said that the net proceeds would go towards the fight in Australia, and that ended because it was a limited time event, and they didn't give an exact figure. They said more than 1.6 million, which is 23 million rand. It's a lot of money. So that went to the organization called Direct Relief, who works in Australia, mainly in the US, but then they've gone to Australia. And I also just want to mention some other companies who have done similar things. Humble Bundle had a big bundle to raise money. Cryptovo, which was a relatively small known dev who made Universe Sim, they also donated proceeds from the sales of their game. Bungie ran a thing with a t-shirt they were selling. And I think Ubisoft, one of the Ubisoft outlets, this page won't load, the Wi-Fi is so slow. One arm of Ubisoft made a bulk donation. So yeah, a lot of these companies are putting their money towards all of this. And it's just nice to see. Some people are taking the stance where, you know, why do you need a carrot to donate to this cause? Because you can just donate directly. Why do you need, you know, a gun skin, a Call of Duty to kind of tempt you? But that's kind of missing the point, isn't it? These big companies have done something at least to contribute towards the cause. And I'll have links to all of that below. And of course, as always, like I just said, if you want to just donate directly, that's something you can do.
It's also just a carrot. I mean, like, I don't want to sound heartless, but I wouldn't have donated to Relief in Australia if Bungie hadn't released that rad shirt with the kangaroo and the ship for Destiny. It's not something that I would have actively like thought about donating money to, but the fact that I can get something and do something good at the same time, win-win.
Yeah, you know? And it's also a matter of like, we're all not millionaires. We can't just like donate money.
It's an easy way, yeah.
Yeah, so when you kind of frame it in your mind as you're also getting something, and maybe you were already thinking about getting the Outback Pack before it was renamed to the Outback Relief Pack, you might think, okay, this is the time. Or when the Humble Bundle came out, you might think, you know, I've got so many games in my backlog, I'm not going to buy another Humble Bundle. Mm. And then the Humble Bundle says, we're going to give this money away. And you think, okay, now I'm going to buy
it. Yeah, because it's a good cause. Right. From giving stuff away to stuff that you can buy. Robin, you've got a strange smartphone in front of us today.
Yeah, I guess it's
a folding
strange.
Smartphone.
Not
really.
I wouldn't put it in the folding
smartphone. A fake folding smartphone.
Yeah, the poor man's folding smartphone. So,
well, how much? I don't
Let's
think it's
get
very
to that
poor,
later.
Yeah.
Well, Robin,
we
tell
can,
us what
we can discuss
got.
Prices a bit later. Yeah. So, this is, well, I have in front of me the LG G8X ThinQ.
That's a mouthful.
It is indeed. So, this is, I guess, LG's take on the foldable phone. We know that LG are looking into foldable phones, but unlike, say, Samsung, Huawei, and Motorola, they haven't actually released a device. Mm. And I guess it makes a lot of sense. We still don't know whether there actually is a big appetite for foldable phones. We don't know what kind of form factors they'll take in future. So there are obviously it's like a laundry list of issues regarding foldable phones. So it makes sense to kind of hold back for the interim. As for this device, it is essentially the LG G8S, which they released earlier last year.
Yeah.
And what it does is it has a dual screen attachment, an accessory that essentially allows you to plug it into the USB-C port on the phone itself, and then you have essentially a cover that doubles as a screen.
Okay.
So LG's kind of positioning this as a multitasking device. And yeah, for the most part, we've been reviewing it for the past couple of weeks now. And I don't feel it's a great multitasking device. Mm. For me, it seems like a great device when it comes to multimedia consumption.
Okay.
So watching videos, playing games, and things like that.
Okay.
It makes a lot of sense. If you, for example, want to watch a video while you're, I don't know,
scrolling Twitter.
Browsing the internet.
Which I actually do sometimes.
Yeah, those kinds of things I think it's perfectly suited for. In terms of multitasking, say, or productivity, like a Galaxy Note device might be for, it doesn't really hit the mark, in my opinion. So a couple of things about the device. Let's actually talk about price. So it's going to cost, the recommended retail price is 15,999 Rand. So that's for the actual phone itself and the dual screen.
Okay, that's not bad.
So from a value proposition, does start to look a lot bit. I think what the Galaxy Fold was closer to, what, the 40? 48 was it?
Yeah, right about there.
I mean.
But before we get to that, aside from the screen, what are the specs? Because if it's got, if two screens are the only things going for it, then 15 might still be a lot of money.
So I guess by modern flagship standards, it's got pretty much what you're wanting. Mm. It's powered by a Qualcomm Snapdragon 855 processor. That's a 7-nanometer architecture, which is obviously, you know, one of the best you can get on the market at the moment. We benchmarked it, and it was actually outperformed the LG G8S, which has a similar internal setup.
Okay.
So it actually outperformed a little bit. It wasn't a huge margin, I think. I can actually just pull out the scores for you in the meantime. But in terms of actual performance itself and the kind of flagship components you're expecting from a phone these days, it did kind of hit all those different
marks. I mean, you're getting HDR10 support, DCI-P3 100% color gamut coverage.
Yeah, so we threw the phone at Antutu.
Yeah.
And we got a overall score of 345,376. And when you compare that to the G8S ThinQ, that got 336,434. So, not a huge difference, but it did outperform.
It's a noticeable difference.
Yeah. So, and also, I think when you actually play with the device in hand, you're not really getting any lag. It multitasks quite well in terms of opening up multiple apps at once. It shows no signs of sluggishness. So, as far as, I guess, a flagship Android phone in 2020 is concerned, it pretty much hits every mark. The reason why I guess a lot of people will be interested in it or want to actually buy it is the dual screen. So I've got it in front of us on the desk here. As you can see, the outside of the screen itself is slightly mirrored.
Yeah.
And as you can also tell, it is a magnet for fingerprint smudges.
Yeah, so it's covered in fingerprints at the moment.
I just want to make something clear here. This is a dual screen phone, not a triple screen phone, right?
No, no.
This isn't like the Galaxy where it has that like gimped screen on the front so you can quickly read messages or anything.
So what it does have that second screen function on the dual screen cover. So you'll be able to see that you've got an A message or you have emails that need to be read or tell you the time.
So it's like, like one of those old school dot matrix type displays.
No, so the display, like I said, is kind of like the second screen you normally get on an LG or Samsung phone.
Okay, right.
It's just that obviously it's got this mirrored look to it.
Okay.
And then once you open it up, you can kind of see it. It essentially looks like two screens that have been
put next to each other.
Yeah, it just looks like two phones.
And what I found, wouldn't say interesting, but what I found intriguing was that the interface didn't really seem well catered to for dual screen use. So you've essentially got your phone's UI, and on the left side where the dual screen is another UI. So it doesn't seem as if the two kind of marry well together.
So there's not like a seamless transition between the two displays. Like I couldn't like take an app icon from the main display, the phone's display, and move it to the secondary.
You can, but it doesn't do it in like a really intuitive way.
Yeah.
So say for example, something that I think would be really cool is being able to like almost flick it across.
Exactly. That's what I thought it would make sense because there's this huge bezel down the center.
Yeah, so you can't really do that. So say for example, I'm watching YouTube.
Mm.
There'll be a row of icons on the dual screen side.
Mm.
I can click on the YouTube icon there, and it will pull whatever I'm watching from the main screen onto the dual screen. So
That's a pretty like strange workaround.
Yeah,
I have to say,
it doesn't seem like enough care was perhaps given to the UI, and I understand why they're not investing a lot of money into say foldable devices or these kind of stranger form factors.
Mm.
But at the same time, you kind of miss the trick here, in my opinion.
I mean, I just feel like this is straight out of LG's playbook. I mean, remember the LG Friends? I think it was for the G5?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That had all the mods attached to it. That was just like, one and done. We're never doing that again. Goodbye. and I feel like this is going to be the same sort of thing, just hearing you talk about it. I mean, it's just I think that something where you would be able to move stuff to the other display, that seems practical to me.
Mm.
Whereas here I need to tap an icon and then it'll launch the app, another instance of the application essentially onto the screen again. I don't know. It just feels like it doesn't feel like it was thought out properly, you know? Yeah, like half-baked. It was pulled out of the oven before it was done.
It's a little bit of a disappointment as well because the actual phone itself, the G8X portion of this like of this tandem duo, is really a good phone on it by itself.
And I'm just looking at the specs here. You got like a octa-core processor running at up to 2.4 gigahertz, 6 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of internal storage, support for micro SDXC, 12 megapixel, 30 megapixel camera. It's a really solid phone. I mean, 7 nanometer process. The battery is how big? 4,000 milliamp hour. I mean, that's really decent.
You'll need it for both screens. Yeah. So let me ask you something, Robin. The phone can be removed from this setup, right?
Yeah, it can.
And used as a single screen. Have you done that at all? Have you experimented with that?
Yeah, so I guess for the first week or so, I used it as a normal phone. And that's where I really enjoyed it. Like you mentioned, it has a lot of solid specs that I'm looking for. It performs well, has a nice camera, took some great shots. It's fast, powerful processor. And then when I plugged in the dual screen, it felt like it was almost inhibited a little bit. Again, if you're playing games or watching videos, I guess to essentially prop the screen up like that and watch it like you would say on a laptop or notebook makes sense. But at the same time, it's like
it's an extreme use case, you know. It's like it's the one time that you need this phone. It'll be great. But the rest of the time, you're probably not going to notice the features.
Yeah, I think it's very much, it feels like an accessory and not like a fully fledged part of the phone.
Mm.
It just feels like I know it is an add-on, but it really feels like an add-on. If that makes sense.
So in that regard, this second screen cover only works with this model, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like if you already have an LG or even a different brand, you can't just buy this cover and put it on.
No, not yet. Well, so this is essentially the latest flagship phone that LG has made. So I don't know what happens down the line. I'm assuming it might be, wouldn't be possible purely for the fact of they might be using different screen sizes, etc. So I'm not too sure because this is essentially custom built for this specific dimensions.
I'm looking at it now, and there's no way you could fit another phone in there. Well,
we can try. We can try, but this has to be sent back to LG, and we don't.
Yeah, and I don't want to break it and have to pay for it.
Well, I'm just saying because. You know, maybe not another brand of phone, but maybe the next LG phone they make, they'll be like, hey guys, we made it in the exact same chassis. It's a new phone, but it's the same chassis. What are the chances of
LG's
that?
LG's history, like Renan was mentioning, their modular plan that was meant to be a real game changer that lasted all of 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a really good phone by itself. But the dual screen doesn't seem to...
This is the thing with LG, is that... The phones by themselves, without the gimmicks, are fantastic. The G5, or the one with the mods, was really good as just a normal phone. But then you have all these weird attachments that you need to add functionality to the phone. It's just like, I'm not interested in that. Give me a phone that is really, really solid, and it's going to perform as advertised. That's all I want. I don't need... a folding or an additional screen to plug my phone into. It's a nice to have, sure, but
I think
it's just confusing. I think
LG as a company needs to perhaps think about where it wants to be in the next few years, because to try and play in the same territory that Huawei and Apple and Samsung are doing,
you can't.
They can't match it at the moment. I would rather have them focus on really solid devices the same way that Nokia does, for example, and just focus on that because they can do a really good job at that.
And they have a gap in the market, not being a Chinese company that has restrictions placed on it by the US and subsequently Google. Like, it feels like they've kind of sat on their hands through this whole debacle with Huawei and the US and Chinese manufacturers in general. I don't know. Like, I like to hear that the phone itself is great. But then when you add on the cool stuff that they want, it just falls apart. And it's sad. It's a little bit sad because LG... Like,
you make me sad, LG.
I've used LG phones in the past that have really been incredible. Knocked it out of the park incredible. And
yeah, like the G8S from last year was a great, great phone.
Yeah.
But and for whatever reason, they couldn't
follow that up. Oh, well, LG, try again. But this time, just focus on making the phone good. That's all you need to do.
Maybe we'll see a good phone. They got the MWC end of this month. Maybe.
I'm holding thumbs. I still have faith in you, LG.
Guys are so mean to my friend, LG.
I've forgotten about Sony, but you, I believe in you.
Man, what is happening with Sony?
I think that's a whole podcast on its own.
Right. Okay, so is it available in South Africa at the moment?
It is available. It launched late last year, very, very late last year. So you are able to purchase it.
Cool.
And we'll have a review and all those good things later today.
Well, up soon.
Available. Soonish.
Available soon.
When it happens.
On hypertext. Right, Clinton, moving on to you. You watched Mr. Robot Season 4. No spoilers, please.
Yes, so this, I'm not going to spoil anything. Last week we talked about Mr. Robot Season 1 to 3 because I kind of caught up. I watched them all in preparation for Season 4. And I want to start with where I watched it. It's on Showmax in South Africa. That's where I watched the latest season. Like I said last week, Showmax is fine, but I had a big problem this time around for some reason. The season 4 doesn't have subtitles. I have no idea why. I spoke to just casually Showmax on Twitter, and they said, we don't know, someone's looking into it. So that was very weird. If you need subtitles or you like to have them, you're going to be disappointed. Anyway, season 4.
Sorry, if I could just get some clarity there. So, I haven't watched season 4, but I'm assuming there might be people from China or Russia based on what I've seen from previous seasons.
Mm.
Those kinds of subtitles or translations, those still happen.
Oh, yes. Right, cool. So, when somebody speaks a foreign language, there is hard-coded, it's part of the actual video. There's subtitles for them. I know what you mean. Sometimes you get a dodgy thing and people are speaking Elvish and whatever. And there's no English translation. No, when people are speaking different languages, there are translations. I mean, there's no subtitles for the actual dialogue, for the English dialogue. So season 4, I saw a comment that could sum up the whole season. And it could just say landing, colon, stuck. they really pulled off this last season. I know a lot of people have, I don't know what you'd call it, finale shivers or shakes or worries after Game of Thrones just soiled itself on the finish line.
What are you talking about? It was great, man.
What? I don't even watch Game of Thrones and I heard it was terrible.
No, all blindfold and headphones through the rest of the episodes and it was great. So if you have been watching the show since I think like 2014 when it came out and you're worried about it not being good, don't worry. Sam and the boys did it. It was a really good final season. We did talk about this last week, but I just want to poll you guys. When Miss Robot came out in season one, a lot of people were just like, the hacking. Oh my God, the hacking. It's so good. It's the most accurate it's ever been. Everybody wants to do this. You guys watched season one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And where did you get past there?
I got all the way to the end of season three.
Okay. So the reason I bring that up is because the show went through kind of a metamorphosis. It was originally just hacking. And then it came to be more about, I don't want to say mental illness, but the mental state of the characters and what they were going through. It became more character focused than story focused.
Yeah.
And I think season four is the culmination of that. Is there still really good hacking? Yes. Is there a really great episode that's kind of like a heist movie? Yes. But it's just interesting to see, because like I said, I did go back and watch seasons 1-3 to catch up. It was really different seeing those first few episodes where it's so grounded in what you're doing in a terminal on a computer to we're going to talk about metaphysical stuff inside of a dream, inside of yada yada. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, the character is essentially spinning out of control.
Yeah.
As I guess the season continues.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. When people were coming out, you know, season two was a bit slow, and then season three, they were ramping up to season four, and people were worried that once it got to season four, that kind of crashed because they ramped up too fast. But what I want to assure to people before they watch it is that they really do stick to their guns. You know, it's come out that Sam and the boys, when they were writing this, they really had an end goal in mind. And that's the, you know, you come from Star Wars where they didn't know what they were doing, right? In the last Star Wars, people didn't like the last two movies because they didn't have a plan of where to go and they just winged it and it came out badly. This is the polar opposite, where from season one, they knew where they wanted to be at the end of season four and they did that. So for the people who are fans who haven't watched it yet, I really do want to assure them that they did stick with everything. They didn't leave anybody behind. Everybody who you wanted to know about, you do know about it at the end, except for some memes. So that was really good. The acting was so good in the end. I really liked it. The show got snubbed, right? It didn't win, a Golden Globe. And that makes me sad.
Yeah, I found that very weird. Like, the first season, there was so much fervor around it. That's the whole reason I actually got into it, was because it won the Golden Globe for Best Series. And then after that, for whatever reason, the critics didn't enjoy it or something.
I think it's just the case of, like, after the first season, a lot of people sort of lose interest and don't carry on watching it. Or they watch the first episode and then lose interest. I don't know.
I think it's also award shows are just BS.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly. And I don't know. I think it's also just a very weird sort of show. Mm. It's like Fight Club, the TV series.
Yeah, and I think if you're not... Like, my parents would never even watch the first season when it was relatively simple to watch, just because they're not into computers. Yeah. And they wouldn't really... I'm not saying they wouldn't understand. It just would be a bit alienating to them to watch what was going on in the screen.
I mean, sorry to butt in. But like, I had a friend who was like, oh, should I watch Mr. Robot? And I'm like, do you want to look up acronyms for 90% of the episode?
Do you know what a terminal is? Do you want to see a lot of Kali Linux?
Yeah, I mean, I really love that they use Kali Linux, but by the way.
It's a bit... I do have a complaint about that. I hate that every time it comes up, they've got a big dragon wallpaper, and they're like, nobody can see me hacking. And then you got this huge dragon wallpaper, is the most, like, look-at-me thing in the world.
I think it is a very alienating sort of show because you do need to sort of understand, number one, what is possible in terms of cyber crime.
Yeah.
And then you also need to kind of understand the underground side of it, like groups, hacktivists, like Anonymous, and what their motivations are and how those motivations turn on a dime, which is what I found really interesting about the entire series so far, is just how varied the themes are that they introduce into the show.
Yeah, so that's a problem with getting into the show, that you need to understand that. And then it also, I don't think people are really ready for how much it goes into the psyche of the characters.
Yeah.
And if that isn't your bag, then I don't know what to tell you. I mean, that's like saying I don't want to watch Game of Thrones because it's got swords and political intrigue. So again, that's just another reason why it's not really a mass market show, even though I really think it should be, because everyone should watch it. And Rami Malek, I can't remember how you correctly pronounce his surname. I know it's not like that. He's been good since season one up until season four. And in season four, he really gets, man, that kid, he gets beaten around. And he really sells every part of it. And like Christian Slater in the first seasons, he was kind of a hard ass, right?
Yeah.
And then as it goes on, his character kind of softens. And Slater did it. He might be like my favorite acting from the last few episodes of season four. He really delivered it well. I remember there was one scene where he's like, he took off his hat and he's like holding it in both hands, like he's flipping like a little orphan child. And he looks hurt and damaged. And it's really cool to see that progression from the first episode, where he's like this bulletproof hacker leader guy.
Yeah.
And now he's this weird, vulnerable character. I'm trying to use very specific words, so don't spoil things here.
I think it's also that whole aspect of it, with the Mr. Robot, with Rami and Christian Slater. I think people were confused, like, about what that dynamic was, because I think they weren't expecting like a psychological drama type thing.
I think like halfway through season one, it started to get there, and then they smacked you with it right at the end, and then the rest of the season continued with that. And I just want to talk about some of the other characters. Darlene, she's also another character who's just like beaten around, and then she gets some wins in this season, which is really nice to see.
I'm really happy to hear that.
Portia Doubleday is Angela Moss. She's still got very big bug eyes, and when people ask her a question, she takes 10 seconds to reply. But she was good in the later seasons too. And the cast is just so good. I don't think there's a single character who is bad. And whenever there is a character acting badly, it's because that's what the character is. Yeah. I know they sometimes, I don't know if they get actual actors to do this, or they just pull someone off the street and be like, we're going to tell you something and you must look surprised. And then they do it.
There's an episode in season three where two programmers get kidnapped.
Yeah.
And even though I know they are actors, because I've seen them in other stuff.
Yeah.
I felt like they had just taken two programmers out of like Google and been like, hey, come with us.
Yeah.
And then like put them through mental torture.
Yeah.
Because they were so convincing. They didn't feel like actors. They felt like they had no idea what was going on. Like they were actors, and they were like, you're on screen today. We're not telling you what we're doing.
And I really just want to point out a few more. You know, the show is based on Rami's character, but there's a character introduced later on. Her name's Dominique. Everyone calls her Dom, played by Grace Gummer. She was probably my favorite character near the end of the show. She's an FBI agent, and, you know, it just shows the progression of the show, where the FBI is like the man, right? They're the bad guys. But she's so likable.
I completely forgot that the FBI was in the show, just by the way.
Because we keep poning them. At one point in the season, they're like, I just hacked the FBI. And they don't say it with any bit of like joke, but it's just hilarious out of context. We're like, okay, I'm hacking this one guy in a restaurant and I'm hacking the FBI. I think at one point somebody even says we hacked the world or something ridiculous. And in any other show, that would be completely cringeworthy. Yeah. But yeah, it's really good. And then Michael Christopher is Philip Price. Man, he's so good. He's Philip, that character, he's got such a distinct voice where it's stern and demanding, but it's got, I don't know what word someone used, it's like wavery. It like goes up and down in terms of tone and pitch. And yeah, he's, and BD Wong, my lord. If someone deserves an award for their performance, BD Wong's probably should get it.
That's White Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I might see that.
Or Minita Zhang, actually. It's just that I can't believe everyone in the show was so good. I think for a lot of people, this is their best performance on screen. And it's weird that you have so many of them in one show.
Yeah.
And the final person is Leon, played by Joey Badass. I didn't know who this guy was. Yeah. And then I saw in the credits, like, Joey Badass. I was like, first of all, who's got that dumb name? Second of all, who took that dumb name and replaced the two S's with dollar signs? And third of all, okay, maybe it's not a dumbass name because this guy's a really good actor. And again, his character that he plays, his name's Leon. If it was in any other show, it would be ridiculous. But because Sammy and the boys are so good at what they do, they make his character fit so well.
Did you guys, in the second season, I don't think this is a spoiler anymore.
Yeah.
Did you guys know he was in prison?
No.
No.
When it first started off, did you guys have...
No. The actual show. I thought you meant the actor.
No.
I thought you... they like worked out something they filmed. No, I didn't, actually.
I didn't
have a suspicion until they revealed it.
So what was happening is that I watched it last month, season two. And what I would do is I would watch an episode and then I'd go back to the forums and read what people said about the show. And I'd kind of do that for every episode. And I remember, I think in episode two, somebody said, is he like in jail or some kind of weird trick thing that they're going to do with us? And it was quite highly upvoted. And then like five episodes later, he actually was. And someone was like, the Messiah. the thing about it is I didn't see it coming, but it didn't affect the story. So I'm not sure why they did it. This is kind of spoilery for season two. I really didn't like that twist.
I wasn't a fan of it either.
Because it didn't affect anything. The characters even acknowledged that it didn't affect anything.
Yeah, just kind of like left prison. And that was it. But I think maybe what they didn't get across is the passage of time. Like how much time passed that he was in prison.
It's very weird, the show, because I think season three takes place over like a week.
Yeah.
Season three and season four, I think, are only like a week each.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the show ends in, I think, early 2016 in the time of the show.
That it actually started.
Yeah. The whole of Mr. Robot takes place in like, I think, just over a year.
Damn.
It's very strange how they structured time. But that's a minor complaint. So again, I can't spoil something, but this twist wasn't as good as the twist that happened in the earlier part of the show, and it pales in comparison to twists that come later. The jail one was very weird. Anyway, we're just rambling about how good the show is now at this point and less about season four. I wanted to bring it up because I don't think it was the best season, but the ending episodes are some of the best episodes. This is probably the best performances from everybody involved. The writing was still rock solid. You still get lots of cool hacking stuff. You still get a lot of cool psychology stuff. And you should go watch it. Like I said earlier, I watch it in South Africa on Showmax. Showmax actually has all four seasons, which isn't very common for them. They usually have like season one and season five and then nothing else. So go check it out and tweet at them and tell them to add subtitles, please, because I'm tired of watching without subtitles. And let's end things off going back to Brendan. We're going to talk about phones again, but this time it's also sad.
Okay, no, I'm not going to do that whole thing. BlackBerry, the smartphones, for the past couple of years, since 2016, they've been manufactured by a company called TCL Communication. And yesterday, BlackBerry Mobile, BlackBerry Mobile, the company still exists. They create electricity. I'm thinking about Eskom. They create software for enterprise.
No, you're not thinking about Eskom. They don't create electricity.
Security. And security software as well. So BlackBerry, the company, has nothing to do with BlackBerry devices except for security and the software that runs on them. So TCL Communication has been making BlackBerry smartphones, and it was announced yesterday that they would no longer be selling BlackBerry-branded mobile devices. So that effectively means that BlackBerry smartphones are dead, unless another company picks up the rights or the license to produce BlackBerry smartphones. Just to give you a highlight of what... for if you do own a BlackBerry, just some advice, is that TCL will continue to provide support for the existing portfolio of mobile devices, including customer service and warranty service, until August 31st, 2022.
That include Android updates?
I don't...
They haven't said.
Okay, so this is just purely dealing with hardware. BlackBerry Mobile deals with the software side of things. So I would assume that they would handle those software updates.
That's kind of the most important part. I'd rather have security patches than customer service. But yeah.
So effectively, I believe that this will be the end of BlackBerry. So the reason that I say that is if we look at data from IDC from last year, the third quarter of last year, the fourth quarter data isn't out yet at time of recording. Obviously, the top three smartphone brands for 2013 were, in order, according to their market share, Samsung with 21.8%, Huawei with 18.6%, Apple with 13% of the market share. Then we move down to Xiaomi, which has 9.1%, and then Oppo, which has 8.7% of the market. And then the others account for 28.8% of the market, which is not a lot. I mean, once you start dividing that up. So obviously we don't know what BlackBerry's market share is from that data. However, if we look at data from expert analysis in 2018, it was pegged at 1% or 0%, depending on which expert you spoke to in 2018. So in my mind, that says to me, if you pick up the BlackBerry brand, you're going to work damn hard to make those phones popular, I guess, is the word I'm looking for here. And I think that the time of BlackBerry is kind of gone. I mean, I think the last big release they had was the Key 2, I believe. I think that was the last smartphone
that
I remember.
It's called Key 1-2 or something like that. Something stupid.
I think it was the
Key 2.
Key 2 LE.
Yeah, I reviewed it in 2018.
And then the LE they released a little bit later, which was the limited edition, but it wasn't all that much of a upgrade. So it just kind of feels like BlackBerry is now going to be gone. I could be wrong, though. You could see a situation where somebody like HMD Global decides, hey, we could bring it back and make some really good phones, because they did that with Nokia. Mm. Nokia was a brand that everybody, I thought, was a joke still. I mean,
so when it comes to HMD Global, that's essentially a spin-off of the team, the Lumia team that was making. So if there's, for example, a cohort within BlackBerry Mobile that wants to do that, I can understand.
Works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to my mind, the things that made BlackBerry great was BIS.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was the phone of choice for people in the enterprise space.
Yeah.
Devices like Samsung Galaxy S's and iPhones have been so pervasive that there is no need for an enterprise-grade phone anymore.
I absolutely
and
agree with you.
And obviously BIS doesn't exist anymore.
And remember when you got unlimited internet for like $50?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing to think of is that like if you are going for an enterprise phone, then you go with either Android or you go with iOS, and then there's development for both of those platforms already. So it doesn't really matter which device you have, especially in the Android ecosystem, and if you're all running the same Android version.
And the new BlackBerrys were just Android anyway.
Exactly.
So what were they offering?
Well, I mean, they did have, I think it was called DTEC.
Yes, their security.
That was a very good enterprise-grade version of security. But again,
you can purchase that separately.
Yeah, the pervasiveness of the brands meant that wasn't really a necessity anymore.
So let's talk about the last thing that BlackBerry had to its name, which was physical keyboards.
Yeah.
Because it was BIS, enterprise stuff, and physical keyboards. So that was BlackBerry's brand. That's
so
the reason
I used the first one that TCL made, which was the Key 1.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoyed it. And it was nice to go from, oh, hey, everything's touchscreen, to an actual physical keyboard. And I quite enjoyed typing on that. But then you reviewed the Key 2, and that was very underpowered for what it was. The keyboard experience wasn't as good. It was just
The physical keyboard just introduced so many extra problems that made it not worth the trade-off. Yeah. The biggest one being the screen. You got an absolutely tiny screen.
In the first iteration, that's sort of forgivable. You can kind of go, okay, well, they're getting out the gate. But when those same problems that people have complained about are present again, you're going to lose people at that point.
Mm. And the thing is, we've almost everyone has moved to widescreen content. Now, if that's horizontal as it should be, or vertical as everybody loves to format, it doesn't really matter because your phone supports that. Once you have a screen that's closer to 4x3, and then you're forcing 16x9 or whatever content onto it, it's just a horrible experience, and that's what you got with the new BlackBerrys.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about playing games, which was almost impossible because half of your phone was a keyboard.
Yeah.
And here's the thing not a lot of people realize, right? If you have a relatively recent iPhone or Galaxy, you can buy, I don't know what the quality of them are, but you can buy keyboard attachments for them where they hide behind the screen and then they fold down like screens used to be. So if you truly do want physical keys, you can get them. It's not the same, and it makes your phone very thick, but you can get them without giving up proper full screen support. So, yeah, it's just all these things were against BlackBerry.
And I mean, it still had a touch screen. Like, the keyboard was just there for typing. You could drag your thumb across it.
Capacitive, whatever they call it.
Yeah. I think that unless another company picks up BlackBerry.
BlackBerry.
Just trademark that one.
I should. Unless another manufacturer picks up BlackBerry, I don't foresee them, or I don't foresee the smartphone brand popping up again. Who knows, Mo? And maybe in 5 years, I might be eating my words and going, BlackBerry's so good now. I did the same thing with Nokia. I mean, Nokia in the Microsoft days, those were dark times, man. I mean, the camera was really good, but that was it.
You're telling me you didn't enjoy Windows Phone?
No, I did not.
You're telling me before Windows Phone you didn't like Symbian OS, Brendan?
No, I didn't. Ridiculous. I did not like that either. Like, I'm sorry, I did not. And then when Nokia came out a couple of years ago with their new slew of phones that's produced by HMD Global, rather. They were really impressive, and they have been impressive in building on that as we've moved through the years. So who knows? Maybe somebody will pick up BlackBerry, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
I mean, didn't we just get a Motorola Razr that's coming out?
I suppose, but what are we going to get? An 8320?
In like 5 years, there'll be something that's called like the BlackBerry Next. Or what was the... It was the Curve, right?
Yeah,
that was the one. They're going to have like...
Bold as well, wasn't it?
The BlackBerry...
Yeah, the Bold.
The BlackBerry Curve
the Bold was
Nouveau.
The higher class one, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't get near those.
Yeah, no, I was a Curve. I was a Curve 8320 for life.
Oh my god, we're gonna get. I'm telling you, in like 5 years, maybe 7 or even 10, we'll get the BlackBerry Curve Nouveau, and then I don't know. They'll work out a way to integrate a screen into a physical keyboard, and that sounds ridiculous. But now we have folding screens, and they almost work right. So why can't we have keys that work as a screen? I think we'll come back because nostalgia is.
It sells a lot of stuff,
yeah,
eh?
It can sell everything, including expensive tech. So I think it's dead for now, but it will sit in somebody's, you know, some company's IP registry, and eventually it will
be revived. Like, hey, we need some money. Let's pull those nostalgia strings. But yeah, so we'll have links to all of the stories at the bottom of this post. And that's going to be us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us and tuning in. We'll be back again next week, at which point we will know all about the Samsung Galaxy S10, S20. Whatever it's going to be called.
It's the new phone from
the new S series from Samsung.
And the Galaxy Z Flip probably as well.
Yeah, the Z Flip. So we'll have all that news. We'll have all that news next week. But for now, from us, cheerio. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio. From Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from Robin Chetty.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week.
What's going on?